from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2009 when Comida, the County of Monroe Industrial Development Agency, approved $1.6 million in property tax exemptions for Medley Center. It was a mess from the start. You probably know that Medley Center has been a bust. It's not created a single job for its tax exemption. And Comida moved last year to pull the property's tax break package. But I could have also pointed to the College Town project, approved in 2013 for $1.3 million in tax exemptions by Comida. The project aimed to create at least 70 jobs. It has been largely booming, shops and food establishments and more. So how does Comida decide who gets tax breaks? How often do these projects succeed or deliver the jobs that they've told us they will? The Democrat and Chronicle's Megan McDermott authored a comprehensive look at Comida just a few days ago. We asked her to come on this program to join us to kind of break it down for us. So this hour, we're going to look at what kinds of projects Comida funds, what kinds of tax breaks are offered, what kind of oversight there is. Consider that Medley Center is one of only two projects that Comida has ever tried to kind of shut down the tax break package, so to speak. So we know that doesn't happen often. Let's talk about that and more. My guests include Megan McDermott, Democrat and Chronicle reporter. Again, that was really, really great work, and thanks for taking the time to come in.
Oh, thank you. Anytime.
Bill Maley's here, Brighton Town Supervisor, quoted in the piece, and we'll talk about his feelings on Comida coming up. Nice to have you, Bill.
Nice to be here, Evan.
On the line with us is Greg Barilla, the Executive Director of Unshackle Upstate. Greg, nice to have you.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And we invited the folks from Comida, the Brooks administration, to join us on the program. We were told that they're unavailable today, but on a future program, the county executive, Maggie Brooks, would like to talk about Comida at length because we're told this is a subject she's passionate about, and so we would aim to bring that to you on a future date at their convenience. So, Megan, real briefly, I'll start with you. We're talking about Comida. We're talking about following our own tax dollars. What kind of annual investment, and I know it probably changes year to year, but what kind of annual investment from Comida?
Well, it does change annually. The 3 years that I looked at, 2012, 2013, and 2014, there were tax breaks given out approximately $68 million in exemptions. So that's roughly a little more than $20 million a year in exemptions.
Okay. Greg Barilla, the Executive Director of Unshackle Upstate, I know your time is limited. In a Megan's article, you defended Comida, saying that with the current business climate, it's necessary. Why is that?
Well, I wouldn't say I defended Comida. I certainly understand criticisms and concerns about IDAs, some of which were brought up by a supervisor. Anytime you're talking about tax dollars, there needs to be accountability, and there's no denying that some projects haven't delivered on their promises. But I think, on the whole, IDAs are a necessary reality in New York State because it is so hard to do business here. And I'm just going to list you, some of the things I've talked on your show before about. We have the highest state and local tax burden as a percentage of income. We have the second highest income tax, second highest workers' compensation cost, third highest gas tax, third highest wireless tax. We have rules and regulations like the 18A energy assessment and scaffold law that drive up the cost of doing business that no other states have. These combine to make it incredibly hard to compete. And sometimes, whether on the state or local level, we do need incentives to attract businesses from out of the state to locate here, but just as important, to retain jobs that already exist and to incentivize locally sourced entrepreneurs to start here.
Greg, some of the critics of Comida have said that some of these companies are crying wolf, that they probably wouldn't leave or refuse to locate if they didn't get this kind of a break. From a business perspective, a pro-business perspective, you seem to be saying they're not crying wolf, that if we're not competitive, that if we don't offer some of these deals, we don't get the jobs, we don't get the deals done.
I think there's some truth to that. We are in a very mobile economy. Businesses can start and locate and relocate a lot easier than they used to. There's not as many brick-and-mortar manufacturing facilities that drive the economy as it was before. So we do need to offer some sort of incentive for these companies to stay until we get our arms around New York State to truly compete on a national and a global level, which is the economy we compete in now. We need to address these high costs of doing business and high barriers of entry.
So, Greg, every politician I've ever covered and spoken to, maybe with one or two exceptions, at some point boasts about cutting taxes. No matter their party, no matter their level of government, they all do it. And if that's all you're listening to, you must think, well, taxes must be going down. It must be getting better every time there's a state budget. We hear about the breaks and the deals and manufacturers' franchise tax and this and that. What would you tell our listeners when it comes to the progress that has been made or not made in your mind about making it easier for businesses locally?
Incremental. There certainly has been some items in recent years, largely due to Governor Cuomo, that have benefited the business community and the business environment in the state. Like you said, there's a manufacturer's franchise tax. There was some corporate tax relief, which sounds great, but when you realize it only applies to about 9% of employers actually pay that corporate tax. Property tax cap was great, but without mandate relief, we can't address actually lowering our taxes. So we have the highest property taxes in the nation, and maybe we've developed a mechanism for which to control their growth. But without mandate relief at the local level, we're never going to reduce them. So certainly there's been some things, but New York really needs to continue down that path if we're ever to think we can compete globally.
So, Greg, is there a scenario you could envision when we wouldn't need a Comita?
I mean, I think there's always going to be a place as long as other states are offering incentives. You know, I think New York will have to compete with that on some level. It's simply the way that economic development is being done state to state right now. But the stronger we can make our economy at the base level with our taxes and spending, the less and less we'll have to rely on Comita or state-level economic development incentives.
All right, Greg, before I let you go, one more question, and I will bring this to Megan McDermott, Democrat and Chronicle reporter who's with us as well. But I'll ask you first, Greg. Baked into the word Comita, the acronym there, is industrial. But as Megan reported in her piece for the Democrat and Chronicle, a lot of the projects that are supported by Comita are not industry or manufacturing, that they cover a lot of other sectors of our economy. Do you feel like Comita is supporting the kinds of projects you'd like to see supported?
Well, I think when industrial development agencies were first envisioned, we were still largely a manufacturing economy. So I think it's become a bit of a misnomer. I think about a quarter of those projects that Comita supported were manufacturing-based, but we're just not a manufacturing-based economy like we once were, and there needs to be focus on other sectors that are growing in our region, largely higher education and healthcare sector. And the IDAs, I think, should and have to a degree, but certainly can do it better, can focus on strategic community investment, whether it's our urban neighborhoods that, you know, a little bit of investment can go a long way in increasing property values, to supporting strategic clusters of economic activity, like you're seeing to a degree in a lot of the projects that are happening downtown in the South Wedge and along Alexander Street. I think those are beneficial, and it needs to happen more and smarter.
Greg Berla is the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. A busy calendar for you, and thanks for fitting in some minutes for our listeners today, Greg. Thanks.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to him soon. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Comita and the work that was done in the Democrat and Chronicle by Megan McDermott, in which the DNC reviewed data related to 539 active projects receiving tax breaks and other incentives for the period of 2012, 2013, and 2014. And Megan McDermott, Greg was estimating maybe 25% of the projects supported by Comita are manufacturing or related. Roughly correct? What did you find?
That is correct. About a third of them were for services, and about 27% for manufacturing. The rest were kind of under real estate projects, civic projects, or retail.
Okay, and Bill Maley, the Brighton Town Supervisor, is here, and some of the criticism that you have sent Comita's way has been in regards to the kinds of projects that are selected. Give us some examples that kind of stand out to you.
Well, that's right, and I do agree with some of what Greg was saying, most particularly with his last statement, that we have to do it smarter. And when we fund, for example, when Comita is used to allow the Topps grocery store to move down the street and put in a gas station, that's not new economic development. Any jobs that are created at that facility really aren't new jobs. Retail projects in general in an economy like Rochester that is pretty fully stored typically are moving jobs from one location to another. So when we talk about job statistics, it's really important that we try to drill down, and it's hard to do, but look at net jobs. That's where the smarter part comes in. The quote in Megan's article that really jumped out at me was from the new acting executive director, where he said, We don't turn away any eligible applicants. We just react to what's going on. And in a nutshell, Megan captured what I believe is wrong with Comita. They are taking just a whatever walks in the door approach instead of trying to use our scarce economic development dollars in a smart way.
When you talk about that Tops grocery store moving and adding a gas station, like you said, when you bring up that kind of criticism, or you talk to the folks from Comita, Bill, you're an affable guy, you pick up the phone, you talk to people, what's the kind of feedback you're getting?
Well, that's one, quite frankly, that I haven't talked to a lot of people that, you know, question that. I will say in the town of Brighton, the Tops grocery store in a plaza spent significant amounts of money. They didn't have to put in a gas station. They were able to modernize their store. I think sometimes we were too quick to say yes and again, not look carefully at the real economic development impact. The notion that 25% of the projects were approved despite creating no jobs. There's clearly a level of oversight. We've heard in the past there's going to be auditing done. Clearly, that's still not happening effectively.
Too quick to say yes, as in a company says we need X, Y, and Z, and you're saying Comita or government in general sometimes is too quick to say you got it.
That's right. And, you know, as exemplified by that quote, if it technically meets their standards, it's approved. And I think we need to look more closely so that we can spend our dollars smarter. I do agree that economic development is important for this area and for others. But it's very easy for an unelected group to spend somebody else's money. And that's effectively what's happening there. The Comita board makes decisions that are tantamount to spending tax dollars of local municipalities that then have to be replaced by the residents and the other business owners in the other property owners in those municipalities.
Listeners, if you want to call in, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions about how Comita works, how it operates, questions about various angles with it, we've got some folks here who might be able to answer your questions, or we'd like to hear from you on whether you think these are valuable allocations of your resources. The phone number. I do remember the phone number just for a moment there. I was going backwards. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, Bill just mentioned some of the projects, and certainly a non-zero number of the projects, we're not even really aiming to create jobs. What are some of the numbers?
Sure. Well, about 25% of them projected no new jobs at all.
Even when they were granted a tax break,
that is
they
correct.
Were saying we're not creating any jobs.
Right. And another 30% or so estimated one new job created. But looking at the numbers over those 3 years, the estimates were really that there were 3,250 new jobs estimated. You know, looking at all of the 539 different projects. And they were estimating the average salary for a full-time equivalent position there at $25,000 a year.
Okay. Again, the number of total new jobs in 3 years, you said?
3,250.
All right, 3,250.
Over all those projects.
3,250 over a number of projects that totaled just over $68 million in tax exemptions. Is that correct? Okay. So that's for our listeners to decide if it's a good allocation of resources. But and more than half created one or zero job.
And that job creation number also covers the entire time of the exemptions. And many of those are multi-year, 10 to 15 to 20-year exemption packages that the projects receive. And I know this is also sort of a nebulous thing to discuss, but they're also estimating that they had retained some 50,000 jobs in the area because of these projects. And then there were an additional significant number of new construction jobs also that were included.
If you're on the phone, and now all of our phones have blown up here because of this issue, we're going to get you in a second. Stay there. But that point that you just heard is one that comes up a lot, which is that these tax exemptions are not always about job creation. Sometimes they're about job retention. Harder to measure?
Absolutely. I know in the story I had quoted a local official with the company who said, you know, 12 years ago when we first came in for our very first Comita break, we had 75 employees. and now we have, you know, in excess of 500. We've been able to grow, and what the breaks have been able to do is give us additional cash up front that we can invest in employees. And what he was in for was getting sales tax breaks on new equipment and furnishings for an office expansion.
Okay. Bill Maley, are you comfortable with the notion of job retention as well as job creation as an incentive here?
Well, job retention is important, but you know, a couple points. One, when we give employer A or business A tax break on a truck or on office furniture, as was cited, inevitably employer B, C, D, and E are going to say, hey, wait a second. I had to pay sales tax. Why can't I get that same freebie? So that's one concern. It creates an unfair situation between those who get these benefits and those that don't. But you also you've got a situation where these incentives you can't. When we talk about retention of jobs. For example, a building that houses medical doctors that are affiliated with one of our local hospitals. I don't think you can realistically say, oh, they were at risk of going to North Carolina. If they're affiliated with Strong, if they're affiliated with Rochester General, they're not going to North Carolina, they're not going to Binghamton. So to suggest that that project saved and retained jobs in Rochester, I think is nonsense. And that's frankly where we need to have closer scrutiny before we decide where we're going to spend taxpayer dollars. We can't forget these are not just dollars that are growing out there on trees. When Comita spends $20-30 million in a year on providing incentives and maybe not providing any jobs, those are revenues that have to be made up somewhere else in the community from our local taxpayers.
Let me grab our first phone call. It's John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. I got to say, the Comita is a necessary evil. And without that, upstate would be in an abyss. And to Bill's point about the Comita taking away or insinuating it's stealing from the taxpayers, there's a certain amount of fact to that, but you know what really agitates me and agitates our economy negatively is the stealing that government has taken from the taxpayers, whether it's the town of Brighton, the school districts, the state, the federal government. They're the ones that have put us in this predicament. And, Bill, you should take responsibility for that as a political leader. And you're not alone. I'm not going to single you out. You're relatively new to this game, and I really think the structural problems have to be dealt with. And I have a lot of solutions, and you don't have time to talk about those today, but the political structural system has to be reformed. Otherwise, we need Comita.
John, that's essentially what Greg Barilla, the executive director of Unshackle Upstate, was saying. So you're saying from the business side you agree that it's being competitive or not?
Exactly. We would be a ghost town without the programs like Comita. And I'll tell you another thing. Thank God right now, upstate New York and the American economy right now has low interest rates, unprecedented for the last 5 or 6 years. But the problem with that is that we're paying the piper on that also. Our balance sheet in the Federal Reserve is out of control. So that's gonna hurt us down the road, but that's another topic.
John, thanks for the phone call. Bill Maley, Brighton Sound supervisor, took a crack at you. I'll let you respond. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, you know, I certainly agree with what John said, that structural changes and structural reforms are necessary. I do believe, though, that, you know, and it's true about local governments like Brighton or the city of Rochester or Comita. We do have to be accountable for the decisions we make. I think the board of Comita needs to be responsible for granting all of these economic incentives that have not created any jobs. And we should all be held accountable in a situation like that.
Well, and then what is the penalty then? And actually, here, let's ask two separate questions, and either one of you can answer. The first question that I think a lot of people have, and again, if you're on the phone, we're coming to you in just a moment, but this is an important point. Comita will hand out an exemption if there is a job creation number or not. Apparently not, because the reporting indicated that 25% of projects were saying we're not going to create any jobs. So you don't have to say we're creating jobs to get an exemption, correct?
That is correct.
But if you do say we expect to create X amount of jobs, is there an overtime kind of policing that says if you don't, we're going to come after those tax dollars and get them back?
I'd say that seems pretty rare. I mean, you spoke earlier about the Medley Center issue, and Medley is one of only two projects that Comita has gone after for
two.
Not two.
And I think it's important to note that Medley, they only went after the Medley Center when the new administration in the town of Irondequoit said, hey, this is a problem, and they took a number of steps. One of them was to urge a clawback, and that's sort of the term of art. Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball when you go into these projects. You may anticipate you're going to create 10 jobs, and you create 8. That's well within what can be expected. But the problem is when we see these deals that go in from the start anticipating no jobs, or when the project significantly changes. We had one, and I do give the administrator of Comita credit. When we saw that a building and a property that had been received a Comita grant had a sign out front advertising rental space for something completely unrelated to what the grant was provided for, I did. I called up the former executive director. We had a conversation, and I know they went back to the property owner and said, look, you got the Comita grant. It was to do this. You can't do something else. We need more of that,
Bill,
we need it from the start.
We referenced Medley Center as the reporting indicated one of only two projects that Comita's ever really gone after.
That's right.
And that was an extreme case. I think you're referring to your colleague Adam Bellow's administration.
Correct.
That kind of took a stand.
They did.
And said, this is not acceptable anymore. But I talked to people going back to 2003, 2004, 2005, when Adam Burson came in, political leaders would tell you privately they were so desperate to get that beautiful empty mall, to get something working, that they didn't want to kind of crack down because they thought, this thing falls apart, it's toast. And that's a little bit where the leverage game is, and that's a hard situation, isn't it, Bill?
Well, it can be. The irony of that one is that knowing all of that, they also granted a Comita incentive to build a Target store next door. Now, the notion that somehow the Target store, a large competitor, one of the largest and most profitable retailers in the world, coming in next door to the mall was going to somehow help the mall. Instead, you were feeding the cycle, giving more economic development incentives to a retailer, and that's not what Comita projects are supposed to be for, that was clearly going to be competing with the mall, and that was in the market, clearly had an intention to expand throughout the Rochester market. That was a deal that made zero sense.
Let me get Alex in Rochester next. Go ahead, Alex.
Yes, hi. Well, you've already covered one of my big issues there, but I think the biggest problem is that if you're saying that one-third of the projects are being given for service industries, I think someone mentioned that.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, there was a case three or four years ago. Someone got a Comita grant to enlarge a body shop for cars. And I'm thinking, well, how could that be keeping jobs here? I mean, if you crack your car up here, you're not going to take it to the next state to get it fixed. Obviously, that's not going to give us any new jobs locally. It might move a couple jobs from one place to another, but give an advantage to one business over another. What they should do with Comita is completely get rid of the one-third that they're giving out to service industries, reduce their budget by a third, and just give all businesses that much of a tax break, and then it'll be even, and there won't be all the shenanigans going on.
Alex, thank you for the call. That lines up exactly with what Dave on Twitter says. He says, nobody debates value of Comita for manufacturing, but for retail and local service, zero economic value. And Alex is saying, when you've got an auto body shop that gets a grant, it's just moving a shell game around, that those jobs are going to exist or they're not. And, Bill, that's been a little bit of the criticism that you have lobbed Comita's way, which is saying just because you give an incentive somewhere on one street, if it moves jobs from one street to another, that's not a net gain.
That's correct. And I think it would be too draconian to say no service industry grants. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to the question of the need for really drilling down and some real oversight in looking at these projects, trying to determine net job creation or net job retention, so that we can make smarter decisions. The notion that we're going to accept any eligible application just doesn't make sense in this day and age.
And the Democrat and Chronicle reporting found that the biggest recipients of these kind of exemptions or deals were the malls, right?
Yes.
And the malls owned by Wilmorite, Grease Ridge, and Marketplace. And a lot of people have asked, well, how come retail? I thought retail was supposed to sort of be lined out of these kind of deals, but there's sort of a special way retail in the mall setting gets roped in, right?
Sure. Well, there are some exemptions and exceptions to a blanket ban on retail, which allows for retail, which would be something, some kind of services that you don't have already in that community or an economically distressed area or something that could be conceivably create some tourism. I'd say perhaps that Field and Stream store at the Marketplace is an example of that. And when I did speak with the Wilmorite officials, you know, what they noted was, one, the tax break that they got, particularly in Henrietta, didn't actually reduce their tax burden. What that package did was increase their tax burden incrementally over a period of time, so they weren't getting hit with, one big jump in their assessed value.
Right, but the way I read that was to say, let's say I'm paying $10 in taxes a year and I employ 10 people, and the Monroe County says to me, Evan, for the next 25 years, you got to pay $12 in taxes a year. You could say, well, I'm going to pay more. But I know that next year I'm going to hire 100 people and I'm going to grow exponentially. And now I'm only paying $12 in taxes. This is a crazy example. But essentially, you could say I'm paying more from that initial, but it's sort of holding it down, allowing for more growth.
That is true.
Right?
That is true. And they were saying that this is...
So it's
because
a good deal.
They were looking for
if
stability.
If they're successful,
right.
It's a very good deal for them. But right. They would argue, and I understand why, if they're successful, it's a good deal for everybody.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the hopes of IDAs like this, that you will have, as the economist I spoke to mentioned, the spillover effects, that the job creation in this one area or the new jobs or this new development will help spur greater development elsewhere in the community, you know, whether it's a few new jobs that increase employment elsewhere or, but that's also kind of like alchemy. You know, you don't really know if it's actually going to come true, and it's a lot of shooting in the dark.
But Bill Maley, and before I get back to the phones, you don't disagree, do you, that if Wilmorite is able, through Field and Stream, for example, to hire, 40 people, 50 people, 60 people, that they're working, that they're contributing, and they're spending their dollars. And it's very difficult, as Amit Badabial in the article mentioned, to measure a spillover effect, but you don't dispute that it could exist, do you?
It certainly could exist. On the other hand, I would, the Field and Stream is a great example. You look right across the driveway there, and you have Dick's Sporting Goods. And I imagine there's quite a bit of overlap between what Dick's Sporting Goods sells and what Field and Stream sells.
What happens when Dick's Sporting Goods says, how come we're not getting that deal?
Exactly. And when they upgrade their furnishings and whatnot, they're going to ask for a tax break.
And you're saying as a town supervisor.
It's a dog chasing its tail.
Yeah, so you're saying as a town supervisor, you've had those calls.
Well, and I was at the public hearing on that Field and Stream because part of Brighton is in the Rush Henrietta School District. So I was, the Rush Henrietta School Superintendent took a very active role in questioning that particular exemption. And that was one where instead of the normal 10-year, they were asking for 25 years. They cut it down to 20. But again, these are retail jobs. There is clearly some cannibalizing of other facilities right nearby. And to call a retail facility a tourist attraction, I think in most cases is a real stretch.
We're late for a break. We're going to come back, take more of your phone calls. Jerry in Rochester, Ray in Rochester will come to you next. Take more of your comments on Twitter as well as we dig into all things Comita and your money next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, we dig into the hidden cost of mental health. Did you know that almost half of all hospital admissions in our region are related to mental health? We'll look at what it costs hospitals, taxpayers, and you, and what is being done about it. Join the conversation. That's Wednesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The genesis for our conversation this hour was really the outstanding work in the Democrat and Chronicle from Megan McDermott, who worked for, I'm wondering how long you worked on that piece on Comita.
I sort of...
Here and there for months,
And there for a few weeks.
Okay.
For a few weeks, going through the data that I had gotten from the state budget authority's office.
These are the kinds of pieces that any cynics about the modern newspaper age should pick that up and say, thank you. Thank you for the work. It was comprehensive. You can find it online. You can also find it in your print edition a few days ago. What day did it come out?
It ran on Sunday.
So Megan's here talking about the work she did there. Bill Maley is here, Brighton Town Supervisor, talking about some of his views on the good and the bad of tax incentives and where they're appropriate and where they might not be. We invited Comita, of course, to come join us on this program, and they were not available today, but I was told by County Executive Maggie Brooks's office that she is passionate about the subject. She would like to talk about it on a future program, and certainly I would welcome her to do that and hope that we can. So let's get back to your phone calls if we could, and Jerry in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, Evan, it's Gary, and I'm just so happy.
I can't win today, but Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, you have two of the smartest and most insightful people in Monroe County on your show today. Two things. One, it was interesting that the subject of Dixon Field and Stream was brought up. I don't know if you're aware of it, but do you know who owns Field and Stream?
Actually, I think that's Dix.
It is. It's Dix owns Field and Stream. So
interesting.
When people talk about, you know, the cannibalism, it's kind of interesting where these tentacles of these corporations reached, so to speak. But the reason I called is sometimes I wonder if we shouldn't question some of the basic assumptions that are made when we talk about IDAs and Comita. And we've heard some of the callers call and say, well, we need to do this. We have to do this to compete. And, you know, it reminds me of the same situation we hear from municipalities that say, like, we can't lose a sports team because it brings in so much money. But when economists study, they find it actually, with the tax breaks, costs communities more than they benefit from it. And especially when we're doing things with, like, malls, with restaurants and retailers, look at the market's there, whether we give these people tax breaks or not. The idea that, and I live in Greece, the idea that Bar Louie's wasn't going to come to Greecans whether they got a tax break or not, when you have a growing community of 100,000 people, it's kind of beyond me. And in fact, I've met a particular reporter at a coffee shop right across the street from that. And here you have a family business where people are struggling to get by, who are really picking up the tab because somebody has to make up for those taxes. And at the same time, a regional chain is trying to make the argument that they won't come here unless they get a tax break. So I think we really need to question that assumption. Thanks. I'm interested in the comments from your guest.
Gary, thanks very much. I'll start with Bill Maley. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, thanks, Gary, for I did not know that Dix owned Field and Stream, but that's very interesting. You're right. You know, family businesses are very important. The cost of going through the application process it may not be a lot of money. To a certain extent, it's dependent on how much of an incentive they're asking for. But it can be a burden. You have family businesses that may not have advisors that know all the avenues, and you do. When you provide an incentive to one business, someone else, particularly if it's a service area, a hotel, we talk about that a lot. There's a finite number of room nights in a community like Rochester, when a hotel is funded with Comida and is able to build for less, and therefore room nights are less, inevitably you're going to be taking room nights away or making that other facility discount their room nights, and presumably there'll be some employment lost at that other place.
But just today, Supervisor Maley, you had Don Jeffries and Lovely Warren, and I think Maggie Brooks as well, touting Rochester tourism numbers as a billion-dollar industry, and maybe, I don't mean to speak for them, but maybe they would say, when we help a new hotel, et cetera, we're not necessarily, it's not always a zero-sum game in that way, and that maybe we're increasing the overall pie, we're catering to more tourism, et cetera.
And that is absolutely true. It's not a zero-sum game, and, you know, for example, the Ice Arena, I know there's, at the Bill Gray's Ice Arena on the MCC campus, I know there's a spin-off effect on the hotels nearby there. So growing the market does help the economy. And when a facility like that can bring in hockey leagues and hockey tournaments from all over the Northeast, that's a net plus. But that's not always the case. Tourism is important. And, I think all of us, when we have the opportunity to improve the tourism environment in this community, that's a good thing. But again, you have to look at the numbers. You have to look at the assumptions that are behind the numbers. I know there are analyses that say room night, each person is going to spend X amount of money on meals and the like. Different types of events, different types of activities generate greater or lesser amounts of add-on revenue.
Okay. And Megan?
I don't know if this directly addresses Gary's question, but Comptroller DiNapoli has been pushing for some reforms to the IDA process, and there was some legislation that had passed a little bit earlier this year that would standardize applications. It would make those applications and the application process more transparent so that the public could see what exactly these companies are looking for. And then they'd also require that there be some kind of clawback provisions baked into the contracts that the different developers are getting from their IDAs across the state. And that might be an avenue to kind of take a better look at the cost benefit of the projects.
Okay, so what we could see going forward is more of that automatic clawback.
You could.
Okay. Let me get back to the phones then, and Mike in Rochester next. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi there. This sounds like a terrific show. I'm sorry I'm coming in toward the tail end of it. I have a couple of comments, but also a question. Number one, I find it very surprising that Comida has not been called to task on this issue before by people in county government, because this is, after all, the Republican Party, which is all about accountability. Apparently, it doesn't apply in this case. Number two, my question. Is there the possibility that tax benefits have been given out, at least in part, because businesses or, say, the town Republican parties have been able to benefit financially, not businesses benefiting financially, but have they been given out in part, or is there the possibility that they've been given out because various businesses have been financially supportive of county Republicans?
You're asking if there's a connect. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I don't want to. I can't get into the sort of investigative reporting on campaign contributions. I don't know whether Megan has, but this is not a partisan attack. My colleague is a supervisor, town supervisor in Webster, Ron Nesbitt. Ron is a Republican, and Ron as well has been a vocal about addressing what he also sees as overreaching by Comida. And in fact, the one other project where there was, in fact, a clawback was in the town of Webster. So, again, on the contributions, that's a whole other subject. But there are people in both parties who have looked at Comida, looked at some of the data that Megan has reported and said there's a problem here that needs to be reformed.
Well, then let's talk a little bit about process, because piggybacking on Mike's comments there, Cameron wrote to us and said, can you please point out that this is not an elected board, that Comita is not an elected board? We have a county executive election this year, and if the Democrat wins, who happens to be Bill's predecessor, direct predecessor, yes,
correct,
Sandy Frankel.
Yep.
If she wins, if the Democrat wins, what happens? Is there a reappointing, a reshuffling of a board? I don't know the answer to this, actually.
I don't know the answer to that either, but this is an appointed board.
Yep.
And they, you know, from across a broad spectrum of business and service industries and union.
Okay. And so maybe to Mike's point, the party in power has the power to appoint the board. And that's, it's always fair to ask, you know, how that process works. It's also fair to point out that there has been criticism over the last 18 months about Comita never saying no. And when Maggie Brooks was on this program in February of last year, she said, look, it's not that Comita never says no. It's that when there is a final vote, they don't say no because the vetting process prior to that final vote is thorough. And the criticism there was, right, but the previous chair, Judy Seil, and some others don't like using email. Sometimes they do things on the phone. The public can't get sort of sunlight into the process, and we don't know how projects are selected.
More of that vetting process should be done in public, and I believe, and obviously I do have a vested interest as a local government official, but as a fiduciary for the taxpayers in Brighton, as are the other supervisors and the mayor, I think it is important that local officials be a part of the process. There is a public hearing, and we can, and we often do, appear, but I think engaging local officials earlier in the process would be helpful in you know, being able to get a sense from that local community, from the elected representatives of the taxpayers, because this is an unelected, an appointed board, and certainly one where the appointments have often been shrouded in allegations of you know, political cronyism, where you can get some very local and relevant input from the local officials that, frankly, is lacking now.
Certainly the issue of municipal officials in the towns and the school districts not having enough information before something goes to Comita is something, a criticism I've heard a lot. I know when Wilmorite was looking for its package in Greece, the school district there threatened a lawsuit in ended up getting modifications to the pilot package.
Similar to some of the vehement opposition in Rush Henrietta.
Absolutely.
As a district.
Absolutely.
Ken
even,
Graham, if I'm remembering correctly.
Even going back to the Medley Center issue, the East Irondequoit School District fought very hard to get a place at the table, and they ended up getting baked into their contract with Comita for that project, that they had ability to review documents that Burson Properties had to provide that said we've met these particular milestones, and the school district looked at these and said it's utter garbage, and they rejected
yes.
them. And really it was the school district was very resistant to accepting a lot of the things that the developers were saying and was instrumental, I think, in keeping a lot of attention on the fact that nothing was happening over there, other than the fact that it's, you know, a big vacant space with a weedy parking lot. But the school district was able to protect itself, you know, better than some other municipalities have.
Sure. And I think, again, can't emphasize it enough, through Megan's reporting, two different projects ever has Comita essentially tried to claw back, and Medley Center was one of them. And it is easy to wonder if it has to get to the Medley Center level of negligence. Once you get an exemption, it's pretty well baked in there for life, it looks like, or life, for whatever the length of that agreement is, sometimes 20 years, 25 years, et cetera.
Sure. The answer that I did get from county officials on that was that really they'll try as best they can to work with a developer or work with someone who's received a Comita grant in order to kind of, I guess, keep the hope alive that the project will come to fulfillment at the end.
And Supervisor Maley has essentially said, not tough enough.
I that's right. It's not some, you know, I agree. You do want to work with people. But there comes a point when it's clear that it's not going to happen. We are stewards of taxpayer dollars. We are stewards of economic development. If economic development isn't happening, that money ought to come back so it can be put to use in the community.
In Rochester, this is Ray. Go ahead, Ray.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Bill, good afternoon to you. This is Ray Tierney. Megan, you did a wonderful job on that article.
Well, thank you, Ray.
I agree, Ray. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And after listening to this whole thing, I've changed about three or four times what I was going to focus on. But I can tell you as sort of a summation, this to me, and I've been to more Comita meetings than I'd like to admit on the air, that through the years, what has always been lacking is leadership. I don't see any leadership. I don't see anyone telling the Comita board to focus. I don't see anyone telling the Comita board to be transparent. I don't see anybody coming to the Comita board and saying, we have to act a little bit like a business. When we hand out tax breaks or incentives or whatever you want to call them, we need to have a contract. I don't see that. That's what's lacking.
I agree, Ray. I think you're absolutely right.
Tomorrow.
You know, and that's why I focused on the quote from the acting executive director replacing Judy Seil. We just react to what's going on. We got to do better than that. That's not leadership. That's not smart growth.
And I think that this article that came out, and of all the articles that have been written and all the discussions that have been raised in the past, this one comes at a very opportune time because we're going to have new leadership in the county. And it doesn't matter to me or shouldn't matter to the public so much about the politics. Of course, politics I'll never be able to get away from, but people should be focusing on how do we make this work. It's an important component of our community to be constantly brought out negatively. I don't think it's a negative organization. I don't think it's negative the people that work on it nor the people who are on the board. I think it all comes from leadership and the lack of leadership.
Ray, thanks for the call. You're not getting any pushback from Bill. And I will say again, I wish that Comita's new board chair or someone from the Brooks administration were here today. They were not available. I understand that. They essentially said, we'll take a rain check. And on a future date, I know the county executive has said she wants to come back and talk about this at length. And we'll do that. But that's why I think you're just getting a lot of nods from Bill Maley. Megan McDermott has done a tremendous job dispassionately reporting at length in a very thorough way what's going on here. And so as we begin to wind down the hour here, Megan, where would you send people to see the work? Not only the article, but there's an interactive graphic which takes you through some of the bigger projects as well. They can find it on DemocratandChronicle.com now.
Oh, they certainly will. And it should be there for the foreseeable future, and as well as in our rock docs. I think I have a database there where you can look up all the various projects.
And I think it was Gary who called and referenced smaller businesses as well. And so let me just briefly ask you, if you think, and maybe Bill can address this as well, do we do kind of an apples and oranges comparison when you've got a smaller company, a small number of employees versus a Wilmerite? Is it harder to compare those because the initial job growth could be smaller? But again, you talked to that company that had, you know, 20 employees 10, 20 years ago, and now they've got 500, and it's hard to know long term. But comparing a Wilmerite to that kind of thing can be difficult.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know a lot of the smaller companies that I talked about were for, you know, very, very small projects. And I'll be sitting in Comita meetings and they'll be giving tax breaks for, like Bill had mentioned, a new truck or someone's buying new computer equipment. And it's hard to measure the impact that a tax break, a sales tax break on a company that's buying new office equipment would have compared to, you know, millions of dollars for a bigger enterprise. But I think Comita officials had been saying what they were trying to do is also figure out a way to help spur on small business, because that's really the backbone of our community, although there's some cutoffs and some criteria. Very, very small businesses aren't eligible because they're too small sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill Maley, what should the standards be going forward? What ought to change?
Well, the clawback is very important. We need to have that kind of oversight to make sure that if a company simply doesn't perform, and not because the economy turns, but simply doesn't perform, and we've seen that too often, that there has to be a procedure put in place, not a discretionary one, but it's got to be in all of the documents, in the agreements, that it's going to be clawed back. I also think we need to look at trying to direct new projects into areas, one, that are clearly providing living wages. We talked at the beginning of this, the show, about that it's a, you know, they're assuming a $25,000 average for those new salaries. That means that a lot of those new jobs are paying less than that. And I do think it's important when we look at job creation, it's got to be good job creation. You know, again, it's another totally different subject. We've talked a lot about poverty in the community. Economic development is one of the ways we work out of the poverty situation. But we've, again, got to be smart about it. We've got to make sure that when we use our resources, we're creating the kind of jobs. They're not all manufacturing jobs. Some of them will be service jobs, but they've got to be at a rate that can, you know, provide support to people.
Okay. And again, you said earlier, not to eliminate all service exemptions, but Megan, the last point of the hour, just to remind people, is when you hear Comita, 27% manufacturing, but about a third in the service industry.
That's correct.
Okay, so almost 75%, almost 3 out of 4 Comita dollars does not go to manufacturing. Okay.
Largely.
Okay, there you are. Really great work.
Well, thank you.
And I appreciate you coming in and helping flesh it out for our listeners. It is important work, providing the kind of look inside a process that some have said needs more sunlight. So thank you, Megan. Bill Maley, the Brighton Town Supervisor, thank you for being here as well, Bill. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Evan. Great to be here.
Our thanks to Greg Barilla, the Executive Director of Unshackle Upstate, who joined us earlier in the hour to talk about why, in many ways, Unshackle has been, well, he said they didn't, not defending Comita, but defending the need for tax relief. So thanks to Greg. And thank you for listening. Our engineer is Val LaBanca, our intern, Caitlin Madison, and the music for this program is provided by Barsuk Records and the local natives, Ra Ra Riot. Have a great afternoon.